The video you just watched was Susan Frederick Gray. She was campaigning to be president of our Unitarian Universalist Association. And yes, she won. So here's her vision as stated in the video, her vision of Unitarian Universalism: to reflect a beloved community that lives at the heart of our community, its mission, spiritual vitality, partnership and collaboration, and organized for impact. In her speech, Frederick Gray was clear, concise, and compelling in her expression of understanding of why we gather as Unitarian Universalists and how we make it happen. Her words also gave a framework to be as effective as possible in serving our congregations as our president, not only serving our congregations, but also the world around us. Her words are not written in stone, and they are not handed down from on high. They are changeable, and I'm sure every so often they get updated. But what she offered through her years of experience was an image of how she views us, Unitarian Universalists. We should do so well. On this day, when you install a new minister, a new senior minister, you install a minister who answered your call to be a leader with vision for what we can be together, and a mission to live our values not only in this space, but out into the world. However, a vision, any vision, is just not the leader's vision or the minister's vision. It's your vision. Together, it's our vision. Who are we? What do we aspire to be? What does our mission, living our values, where does that lead? In 10 years, what does this congregation, what do you want to be known for? The church that, what do you want? A few weeks ago, I told a story about a traveler, you might remember this, a traveler who saw three workers along his way. When he asked the first worker what he was doing, the first worker just said, "Oh, I'm just pushing sand around to fill these forms." Okay. When he got to the second worker, he asked, "What are you doing?" And this worker said, even though he was doing the same thing, he said, "Oh, I'm making bricks." And when he passed the third worker with the same question, "What are you doing?" that worker responded, "I'm helping to build a cathedral." In reality, they all had the same job. They were doing the same thing. The difference was that how they viewed what they were doing. Now, we can use the work of Simon Sinek to describe what is going on in this story. Sinek is an author, a motivational speaker, and a consultant. And in a TED Talk titled "How Great Leaders Inspire Action," Sinek shares a powerful insight into understanding human behavior. First, he draws a set of three circles, one inside the other. He calls these the golden circles. And then he labels each circle. The center circle, he writes, "Why?" The next circle, he writes, "How?" And in the third circle, he writes, "What?" He believes that 100% of the people know what you do, the outer circle. 100% of the people know what you do, whether you're a company, an entrepreneur, or I might add, a church. And some people, not everyone, but some people will know how you do it. But it is the why, that center circle that causes you to get out of bed in the morning. It's the why your organization exists in the first place. This is why you care. In his observations, Sinek believes that most of us communicate from the outside of the circle in, from the concrete to the fuzzy, from beginning with what to how and rarely why. Sinek gave an example that is close to home for those of us who live in Ohio. The example was even close to home for me, for my home state, considering for years the license plate read, North Carolina, first in flight. Yeah. But Sinek used the Wright brothers to illustrate the power of his golden circles. It seems that Orville and Wilbur were not the only ones attempting to fly. Samuel Pierpont Langley, anybody ever heard of him? A little bit. Well, Samuel had, all the necessary components for success. All of them. He had capital. A lot of people gave him money. Even the War Department gave him like $50,000, which was huge at the beginning of the 1900s. He had plenty of money. He had enough people. He had all the best people. He served on Harvard boards, and he was connected everywhere, and he hired only the best. And the market conditions, they were perfect. Even the New York Times followed Pierpont's every move, Langley's every move. By all measures, Langley should have been a success. He should have been the first to fly. But down the road a bit, Orville and Wilbur were attempting the same feat, but they were not as fortunate as Langley. They had no outside money. They only had their meager earnings from a bicycle repair shop, and that could not have been much money. They had a small gang of workers, none of whom had college degrees, not even Orville and Wilbur. They didn't have degrees either. And they had no press, no newspaper reporter followed them around. And on December 17th, 1903, when they finally launched a successful flight, it took days to get the word out. Now, the difference between the Wright brothers and Langley was the direction of their communication. Langley worked from the outside in, from the goal of what? To be rich and famous, to the technical how. He never ventured into the why. Orville and Wilbur, on the other hand, believed they could fly. That is why they kept on trying, and people believed in them. Even with low pay and many failed attempts, they actually took 5 sets of substitute parts with them every day to work. The people who were working with them gave of their blood, sweat, and tears because they believed in the why, the vision. Langley only worked for riches. The Wright brothers, they worked so humans could fly. Now, our brains, they're set up to differentiate between the neocortex function of the rational, technical, language-based outer circle and the limbic functions of the inner circles, behavior, feelings, decision making. Ever hear that people vote with their heart, not their head? Let me repeat that statement. Our brains are set up to differentiate between the rational, technical, language-based outer circle and the inner circles of behavior, feelings, and decision-making. When we communicate from the outside in, we understand facts and figures and benefits. But when we communicate from the inner circles out, we talk directly with that part of the brain that controls behavior. Have you ever had that gut feeling or instinct that even though you had all the facts and figures, that something just didn't feel right? Have you ever had that feeling? I have. That's your inner circle, limbic brain, that we often refer to as heart and soul. It's that part of our brains that's communicating feelings to us. The information, the facts and figures haven't yet reached the neocortex outer of rationality. Langley had people working for him who only saw paychecks. They viewed the flying project as a job or pushing sand from our other story. It was an outer circle functioning of what they were doing to earn money. Langley, well, the day after Wilbur and Orville successfully flew a flying machine, guess what Langley did? He quit. Yep, because he was only in it for fame and fortune. The Wright brothers knew in their gut that they could fly. Others also believed in and worked for that cause. It was the dream of why that they kept trying. In a bit of advice, Sinek states, if you don't know what you do, then how do you expect others to get other people to understand what you do, to vote for you, to buy from you, or most importantly, be loyal and want to be a part of what it is that you do? The goal is not to sell people what you have, but believe what you believe. If you talk about what you believe, you attract those who believe what you believe. All this makes me wonder, what is our goal? Can we articulate what we believe? Remember those elevator speeches? Can we articulate what we believe? Do we have a vision that communicates clearly the why of First UU? Why do we do what we do? What is it that we believe that we are doing? In our story of the three workers either did the what of pushing around the sand, the how of making bricks, or the why of building a cathedral. Samuel Pierpont Langley did the what of launching flying experiments to get rich, but Orville and Wilbur Wright did the why of believing they could fly. So what inspires us? And how does First UU inspire the world and even our own community? Now, a high-level Google search reveals that a vision statement, the why, that a vision statement should do these things. Project 5 to 10 years into the future. Dream big and focus on success like you're gonna do it. Use the present tense. Use clear, concise language. Infuse your vision statement with passion and emotion. And paint a graphic mental picture of the business you want. In our situation, it would be the church that we want, the congregation that we want. Another site states that a great vision statement should use as few words as possible. In our flying example, Langley's vision might have been this: to make money. The Wright brothers' vision statement, on the other hand, might have been to build a machine that allows people to fly. Which one would you follow? Now, here's an example that I've had in a congregation of working on vision and mission statements. They were doing all the talking and listening to each other, and a couple things kept bubbling up. This congregation was interested in education and getting to be better known out into the community. At first glance, education was just too broad. Do we tutor? Do we pack school lunches? Do we bring kids here? Do we help in the classroom? What do we do? So nothing really happened at first. And the second one, be better known in the community. Well, that gave me license to go out and just work on behalf of the congregation, and we built interfaith relationships and community, and it was just wonderful. But one day, back in a meeting room, the rentals committee was meeting. This was a church that actually depended heavily on rentals. They would take the first dollar that came in. It's like, oh yeah, you can rent our space. Well, occasionally they had a few values conflicts, so they first decided, well, in the future, everyone should at least meet or agree with our values. That's a good starting point. But then they thought deeper. The congregation was telling us that education was important. And what they did, if a potential renter met the qualifications of meeting the basic values, they went to the top of the list if they were education focused. By the time I left that congregation, they hosted an alternative high school, a preschool, a young women empowered for junior and high school girls to learn leadership. They hosted two groups of autistic children, helping to socialize them. They hosted adult daycare. They hosted homeschoolers. They hosted events. And then they networked all those people so they could work together. It became not only a spiritual community, but an education campus, because they had vision. When I was pre-candidating here for First UU, I wanted to be your senior minister, and I went through 6 hours of interviews with your search committee. It's a long time. We finally exhausted the formal questions. We were asking each other, do you have anything else? And finally, Judy Kleen, the chair of the search committee, piped up. And she just said, I have a question for you. What do you see for the future of First UU? I thought that was a grand question, the best one of the day, because it invited imagination. And I responded, I see one of two possibilities. First UU could keep on being the great church that it is, the wonderful community, taking care of each other, doing the things that you do so well. And that'd be awesome. But second, there's an option. You can take all the wonderfulness of who you are and what you do, and you can become something even bigger. You can become what this community, what this state, what this world needs Unitarian Universalists to be. I said, you are the largest UU congregation in the largest city of the state, which also happens to be the state capital. What do you think you could do with those ingredients? Could you become, I don't know, a flagship church? A central point? A hub? Maybe even a beacon? What can you do with all those ingredients? What can you become? if we want to be a church that matters, not just to ourselves, but in response to the needs of this world, and goodness knows there are so many needs. If we want to respond to the needs of our world, our state, our community, then we must set our sights high. We must craft a vision that gives us direction, that reflects what we want to be and how we want to be known in our community and even to ourselves. Now, we're going to help you out here because my hope is that you will attend one of or both of two town halls that we have scheduled coming up. They're after the second service on November 19th and December 3rd. And once we talk and we get everything set in place, we'd love to have a final vote on the vision statement at the mid-year congregational meeting in late January. I think we can do that. Can we make that happen? But we need your input. What do you want to be? Who are we? The Marianne Williamson quote that is the theme of the installation service this afternoon is also a theme for everything we do. She talks to a heart and soul when she writes, "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us." I ask you, are we ready to let our light shine? I believe you are. That's why you called me to be your senior minister. And I invite you to let's name our vision and make it a reality. Because who knows? Maybe we can all fly. Blessed be. Amen.